Well, I grew up about four blocks from here in the Barales neighborhood. And, you know, my mom found herself as a young single mom, you know, and when she was in her early 30s and I was about 2 1/2. And she went back to work, two minimum wage jobs, was a secretary actually at one of the development organizations here, community development organizations, and then was a cocktail waitress on weekends at the Disabled American Veterans. And so watching her struggles shaped my values a lot. I mean, we grew up in a family that was, you know, very, very poor. We relied, even though my mom worked two jobs, we relied on food stamps a lot of times. We relied on free lunches. And but because of Democratic investments and programs like Head Start, I remember when she took me to Head Start and how much that changed not just my life in terms of being successful in school, but my family's life. Because in those days, especially a woman without a college education who was a single mother, you know, it was very, very difficult. You couldn't really get back into the workforce if you couldn't afford, you know, decent care for your kids. Obviously, this is a problem that a lot of mothers still face. We've made a lot of progress, but Head Start was brand new, right? So because I could be in a safe place, and my older siblings, I was the youngest, my older siblings were already in school, but they could get to school and they could get fed and they could she went back to work. She could do that and feel safe about it and keep a job. And that's why I'm just so passionate about what I believe in, right? You know, the reason why I was so excited about the job that I did for 4 years at New Mexico Voices is because the kids that they fought for were kids like I was, you know, and kids like all my neighbors in this area, which is, you know, they just want a chance to succeed. And it's Democrats who've always said, look, we're in this together. It's not the law of the jungle. It's not every man for himself, every woman for herself, every kid for himself, every senior for himself. So so my worldview is shaped by my own experience. And as a result of Head Start and good public schools and Pell Grants and investing in student loans for us, my two older sisters, who also shaped my values, were able to not just graduate high school but go on to graduate school. My sister got a PhD and works at Sandia. She's a feminist. You know, even though she works on nuclear weapons, she's very, very active as a very community-minded, helping other young, especially Hispanic women, try to go in the engineering. My other sister's a major in the Army Reserve. She's an Army nurse. And so they succeeded like I did because they got a good public education. They got some help going to school. And so we all, not happily, but we all pay our taxes because we all know that there's a family just like ours out there, and there's a mom just like we had who they work hard. They just want a chance to succeed, and we have an obligation to really pay forward. And we all, our worldview is all that, you know, we're in this together, you know, and we all do better. The last thing is, and the reason why I've been really leading with Medicare and Social Security is because, again, my mom in the last, she died 10 years ago. I was very close to her and 10 years ago. But I remember the last 10 years of her life were tough. She had some health problems, but she had worked, you know, for 30, 35 years. And her retirement was mostly Social Security. Obviously, we helped her a lot. But she was able to stay in her house here in the neighborhood. She was able to get health care. She had some eye issues and she had heart issues. But she never had to worry because she had paid her whole life into Social Security and to Medicare. And she knew that, you know, that wouldn't be pulled out from under her. And one of the reasons why I'm running is I look at what Ryan and Boehner and these guys are doing to Head Start, to early childhood, to public schools, talking about privatizing parts of Medicare. And I just think, you know, we would not have made it. We would not have made it as a family. And my mom would have not had a dignified existence, retirement, without those programs that she paid into her whole life, you know. So I think there's some things we can fix, not cut them. But, I mean, one of the things I've talked about in terms of our what we ought to be doing for families and for women in particular is honoring the work that they did raising families, like my mom, that she was out of the workforce for a good chunk of her adult life and was essentially penalized for that at the end of her life because Social Security did not recognize, you know, child rearing and raising a family as worthy of you know, getting the quarters you needed for Social Security. So she had to live on a smaller amount, right? And one of the things I think we could do very easy with Social Security, even because I think the fund is solvent, is to take the cap off of the income cap so that folks who make more than $106,000 continue to pay taxes like everybody does on Medicare, so that we have enough so that women like my mom, who are out of the workforce to raise a family, and in some cases, you know, there are more men doing this, that they don't get penalized for being out of the workforce, and that we take into that into account in terms of their Social Security benefits, so they can have, you know, a decent standard of living. So that's probably one of the few changes, you know, taking the cap off of income and adding this caregiver tax credit or caregiver credit for folks who are out of the workforce. Those are the only two changes I think we need to make to Social Security. So,
okay, let's go back to when you were at Voices. You said your time at Voices, but you were the director of Voices.
Yeah. So for 4 years, I was executive director of Mexico Voices for Children, which is, you know, an organization started 25 years ago by a couple of pediatricians who were just seeing the dismal outcomes for kids in New Mexico, right? And nobody was really advocating for them. When the job of executive director came open, I was approached by a couple of folks on the board and everything, and thought, you know, you'd be great because, you know, this is, even though you're not a guy who has been active in children and families work necessarily, but I had been a huge advocate on the city council for families, you know, fighting predatory lending, fighting for more intervention and programs, fighting for more public education, fighting for us to take our bigger role in early childhood. And because of my own experience as a Head Start kid, you know, Kay Monaco, who used to run the organization and who did a great job, and some of the board said, well, you really had to look at this. And I had never even thought about it because my background was economics. And I looked at it, and I met the team, and I saw the incredible work they were doing, and I thought this would be just a great opportunity for me to help kids like I was and families like mine. So I got the job, and it's still the best job I've ever had. I mean, I've worked in Washington, I've worked abroad, but I got to tell you, we had a mission that was supported by some important funders in the state and nationally to prioritize children and working families, including working mothers. So we were out front on things like parental leave. We were out front on a working families tax credit. All the things that families like mine would have, you know, we made it, but we struggled fighting for food stamps. You know, people think, oh, you know, it's a culture of poverty. For us, it wasn't. It was really the difference between, you know, where we were going to get the sort of the food nutrition we needed despite my mom working two jobs. By the way, and despite my sisters working at 13, 14, you know. There is no more fulfilling work that I've ever done in my life than leading this great team. And
let me go back to what you were saying about Social Security. Are you suggesting giving credit to women who are caring for children as though they had been working?
Absolutely. There's a number of ideas. Martha Burke, who I'm sure I know has been on your show, is really done a lot of work in thinking about this, and some other experts on the issue. It's a question of how progressive are we willing to be, right? I think at the very least they ought to get some credit even at the minimum wage level for the years that they were child-rearing, right? And that it should be counted against their benefits when they do retire as opposed to getting zero credit for those years. I'd like it to be a lot more generous than that. I think the starting point should just be at least at the minimum wage level, right? So, it's not going to put anybody into a different tax bracket, but it'll help, you know, mothers who – and families who really were out of the workforce, you know. Sometimes, again, thankfully, there's more and more men doing this, but it's predominantly an issue that affects women, you know, like my mom. And so I don't think they should. I think it's unfair. And I think we can afford it, you know.
I'm asking candidates about the time to run to be in Washington, about whether this is the time to be in Washington. There's so little you can do, I think, and there's so much fighting.
Well, it's unfortunate. I mean, they're not that politics, certainly Congress has ever been an easy place to operate and get things done. But I think, unfortunately, the Tea Party and the Republicans have just become sort of so entrenched and so contrary to everything that we used to be able to work on. Now, it's always been tough to work on our core values. We've always had strong differences on reproductive rights, on women's rights issues, on LGBT equality issues. So those issues, no matter what any of us say in this race, you know, reaching across the aisle, those issues We don't need people who are going to cut deals on those issues. We need people who are going to stand up for what we believe in as Democrats, and in my case, as a progressive Democrat. I wish I could say that given the right set of Republicans and given the right set of Democrats that we would resolve some of these issues like, you know, the Affordable Care Act or ending the war on women. But, you know, sadly, you know, John Boehner and Paul Ryan and Eric Cantor, the Republicans running the Congress, have made a decision that they want so bad for this president to lose. They want so bad to keep power that they're willing to throw any possibility of working together, you know, by the wayside. So, you know, I appreciate what my colleagues in this race have been saying about reaching across the aisle or working with Republicans. But, you know, I don't hold out any hope of working with John Boehner. My hope is that we get a majority and we reelect Speaker Pelosi so she'll weaken with a Democratic agenda. That's why I'm running. I'm running in a Democratic primary to represent Democratic values. And I guess there was a time on some issues where you could really say, okay, on a jobs bill or on a bill that's not to the heart of our core Democratic values, we could work together. But even those bills now, a jobs bill that the president introduced, which was a bill that they had all voted for, Republicans, even that. And when I delivered 35,000 petitions with other progressive colleagues from around the country who were running to his office saying, please just schedule this modest jobs bill, which was mostly tax credits and a little bit of infrastructure investment, they won't even schedule that. So if we think, no matter how masterful any of us are, that we can, some, you know, by having breakfast or lunch with these guys, that we're going to get them to work with us on our core values, it's just not going to happen. So I have a very different view of how you're going to get things done, given the dynamic you just described, which is we need to elect a majority of bread-and-butter Democrats, as many of them as progressive as possible, to get back to our core values and to have the critical mass, not just on the floor of the House, not just in committees, but in our own caucus. Because what I have learned, my experience in the state legislature, is that it's not good enough to elect any Democrat, even if you have a huge majority like we had in the state Senate. If you have Democrats, even if it's just a small number, who are so eager to cut any kind of deal, even if it undermines our values, then you can't get a lot of bread and butter Democratic issues done. The reason why we couldn't pass domestic partner bills, despite almost a two-thirds majority, a 27-15 majority, was because there's a handful of Democrats who voted with the Republicans. The reason why we had to kill all this incredibly tough anti-woman, anti-choice legislation in the Public Affairs Committee with Dede Feldman and Senator Feldman and Senator Garcia and Senator Nava and I, all of whom, by the way, have endorsed me, because we were in those fights together in the Public Affairs Committee. And the biggest job we had in the Senate was killing these really extreme bills that would have undermined basic rights for women, not just reproductive rights, but really there were bills about differential treatment for women in insurance coverage, for example, that a handful of our Democratic colleagues were working with Republicans on to try to undermine. So we have to send people to Congress who don't just say, look, there's all these opportunities to reach across the aisle. We need people who are going to represent our values. And sadly, it's going to be a fight. And so I think the difference in the race, frankly, is that, you know, I do not pretend to be some sort of negotiator with the Republicans. My job as a Democrat, certainly as a progressive Democrat, is to fight for our core values and to help create a coalition of not just members, but of groups, organizations, of women's groups and environmental groups and social justice groups to move an agenda. And we're not going to do that in 2 years. I think it's a much longer-term movement. But we've got to get the country back to a place where the extreme right wing is just not, bringing back these really, kind of Neanderthal thoughts of what reproductive rights are and taking us back to the 50s, you know, and now with, you know, the Violence Against Women Act to try to say, well, certain people get rights and some people don't. And it's the House is where a lot of this stuff is happening. We don't need squishy Democrats. We need people to spine up, help the president take a stronger position, because if he's got the support, he's going to be able to take a stronger position. And we need Nancy Pelosi back, because she's the one who is – like me, you know, doesn't negotiate on her values. You know, I mean, I think she compromised on a couple of issues, but they weren't the core issues that we believe in as Democrats, like fairness and equality.
Okay. Well, the obvious next question is New Mexico ready for you, especially given that this seat has been held in the past by Republicans?
Well, I think that's a kind of a misinterpretation of where the seat really is. So 2006, Heather Wilson held the seat, 4-5-term incumbent at that point, narrowly held the seat in 2006. That was not a presidential year. That was not necessarily a wave year. Beat Patsy Madrid by less than 1,000 votes. So that was the beginning of a serious change in this district that I think either people misunderstand or they don't want to really embrace. So in 2008, President Obama won this district by 20 points. Martin Heinrich won the seat by 12 points. Now, some people say, oh, that was an anomaly. You know, that was a presidential year, huge year for Democrats. Okay, 2010. So if this was a Republican seat in a year when the Republicans picked up dozens of seats that were marginal seats, swing seats, Martin Heinrich should have been swept out. There's if that was truly the case, Martin Heinrich won that seat by 4 points. It was a close race, but the point was it was his first reelection, which is always your toughest one. He won it. So I believe, and the national pundits believe, that this is a likely, they've classified it as a likely Democratic seat. In fact, the Republicans are saying publicly that they're not really going to put a lot of money into trying to keep this seat. So what that means is we have a huge opportunity.